Recording. I'll do just a super quick intro. I'm not sure that George has audio and Steven just came back in, so I guess I'll take that over. And then I'll just turn it over to you guys.
Recording started.
Hello and welcome to our Friday session at Change 11, even though it's 2012. We have some fine folks out west who are coming in to talk to us today. Doctors Valerie Irvine and Jillian Code are going to be giving some kind of technical wizardry display that I've not had entirely described yet, but it is going to be, I'm interested already. They've been sort of peeking, sort of whispering little hints the whole time. So I'm going to turn it right over to Valerie and let her give a description of what this session is going to be about, and then we can all sort of strap ourselves in for the ride.
Wonderful. We're just... What we were wanting to do today was be able to answer any questions from people who had any from the last session, or if they they weren't part of it and wanted to ask questions now live about our presentation, get through, I think, some of those things, and then start playing with some of the tools that we have that hopefully will work. One of them is called Blue Jeans Network, and what that is, it allows calls to merge together from video conference units and Skype from, you know, wherever people are Skyping it on to telephone calls, and it merges it all into one meeting room. So that said, I've only done it one time. The first time was on the Tuesday, right before we did our session. So we're going to see if we can play with that too. The other thing that we're going to do is just show a stream, hopefully, of our Coordinate Media Management System showing the video and content that we have there. And just to give you an idea of some of the different interfaces that we have access to that we're playing around with and trying to see, it's not so much about the tool that we're exploring right now. It's more about, you know, we talked about the concept of multi-access learning. And so, you know, so how can we do that? What are some of the supports that can be used to do it? So some of the things that we're looking at are, like I said, those two tools, and maybe in combination even, although I heard that there's some more options out there. I heard Cisco now has something. I haven't looked at it yet. We've got to get the Cisco guys down into the lab from the Vic Technology Park we have. Apple, yeah, I don't know. Are we supposed to know about that? Well, yeah, so we're told that there's supposed to be some, I don't know, can we say that? Some big announcement at the end of the month. Well, I do know what it is, so, well, what it's related to, but again, one of the things are we supposed to know, so who knows, that could be another option for us. So that's, again, that's been one of the nice things about, you know, working here and having the Tile Lab is that we get to play a lot, and you know what, it's been wonderful to actually have the opportunity to explore different tools and different techniques of seeing how to make these things work. And, you know, a benefit also, we've had, like, our lab has a lot of value to it. And one thing I've learned through university is that money begets money and also begets partnerships. So that's another piece that's out there that, you know, we tend to be able to try more things, I think, because we get corporate partners willing to share with us a little bit more than, you know, if we were sitting here without a lab underneath us. So that is a benefit of being at a research-intensive university that has, here it's called Canada Foundation for Innovation Funds, BC Knowledge Development Funds that allows that. But so did people want to start? Like, does that sound like an okay agenda for you to kind of start with people asking any questions and then moving on to, you know, playing around with some of this stuff?
One of the issues with the question, maybe you can start by addressing some of the questions that you carried over, because we have no real guarantee that the people in the chat room are the same people who were here on Tuesday or Wednesday. So were there any questions that particularly stuck out to you? I know that you said earlier on that there were some issues that you wish you'd gotten a chance to get to. Maybe if we can start with one of those questions, and maybe if George or Stephen can pull one of those out from the former session, we can start there, and then maybe that'll get the questions started in the chat room.
Well, I remember one, I don't think I touched on, I'm working from memory because I was supposed to get back to doing that today, but that minister visit went overdue, and then other things, like I said, chasing the convict down the street was the other part, so I didn't get back. That was my agenda time. But one thing I remember someone posted a question, like, and I think I misinterpreted it, was do face-to-face students fail more than online students and those kinds of things? And I do wonder about the supports that we provide in online environments. I think there's a benefit when there's a face-to-face course where, you know, you have that day and time and, you know, that chunk of either 1.5 twice a week of 1.5 hours twice a week or a block of 3 hours, you're there, right? You are going to be there for the students. As soon as we get into online environments, you know, there's an opportunity on both sides for people to slack, right? Students to slack and instructors to ghost off. So that is always a concern. If we make things multi-access or have that kind of responsibility commitment, I think that we could have more, more engagement of learners. That's something that I'm going to be researching in the coming year and exploring with, like I said, multi-access. So, but I totally missed that. I think they're talking about what's the percentage of face-to-face online, and I misconstrued that question. Did you have another one there, Jill, you're pulling up, or?
We do have a question from Sheena in the classroom.
There you go.
As a UVic education alumni, humanities teacher in BC, an MA in learning and technology student, I'm curious to know how much influence the Thai Lab is having on UVic's faculty of education, the institution overall.
I would say huge influence. So I can tell you I've had our vice president in the lab, actually many, from vice president academic to vice president finance to our director of academic technologies, our CIO, we've had every you know, kind of exec through here, our VP research, I believe, as well. So, and we've had lots of corporate partnerships, and so it all brings forward the brainstorming. And yeah, the better picture up there from Minister Yamamoto today and the Deputy Minister, and both from Advanced Ed, then we were, you know, talking about, like I said, multi-access learning and exploring sort of new ways. So, so I think that, you know, that's got to have some influence when you're talking to decision makers and people with the bank account stuff. So in terms of the Faculty of Education, we're just, Jill and I teach an EDCI 336 course. So in that context, we've integrated everything we do with our classes. So we've, you know, brought students in here. We've wheeled our equipment out there. We've been able to draw on, you know, like corporate relationships that's benefited for bringing in equipment or bringing in guest talks. So it's influenced both our courses. Also, we've got people wanting to be pilots from across campus, wanting to, you know, be our guinea pigs, right? So I think from that angle, it has done that. Is there any other kind you ask? I missed it. This is the thing I don't, can I ask an annoying question? I'd love for you to ask an annoying question.
Yeah, it's interesting, a lot of the stuff you're talking about sort of echoes a lot of the experiences that we've had here. We've had these new connections with corporate sort of sponsors, and we've done the CFI route as well. My first job at my university was actually working on a CFI grant. I wonder about the balance in ed tech, and this is one of the things that a lot of my colleagues and I have been talking about lately, is how you end up having to slide towards the technology for granting purposes. So in order to get high enough up the ladder, in order to get enough notice, you need to have enough money in the grant you're doing to attract the attention of senior administration, and then you end up writing your grants maybe not on purpose, maybe not because you want to, but you know that having something like a $150,000 video conferencing system, even though you know Skype might work anyway, like how do you work with that balance in your institute? How do you make those decisions?
Well, basically, the stuff that we've tended to purchase has been, both either purchase or acquire, have been across a range, right? And then what I really hate is someone sort of sitting back and, oh, yeah, well, that's no good. It's like, well, have you ever used it? No, but it's got to not be good. Well, I think, you know, you better reserve your judgment until you've tried it, right, whatever the it technology is. So there are definitely pros and cons and differences, and if there's a budget that allows for something that's expensive that does it, you know, better than a cheap free tool, you know, I think there are certain benefits. BlueJeans Network, for example, so wicked with the ability to interface with the Skype and the telephone and all those kind of things. But it's got a cap of 25 users. I was told that they're going to increase it, and that's the goal, to increase that. Where if you look at Accordant, yeah, that thing's the price of your piece. But it can go up to like 150,000 streamers. So everything has a different requirement, a different fit for different case study, for a different, you know, user group or budget, you know. And if you feel, well, that's just so expensive, and then you go, yeah, but if we can get that many more students supported, that many more enrollments, then, you know, that pays for itself and then some. So why, you know, what? Like, I think I'm not always to the lowest common denominator or the, you know, freest route necessarily, because I think we do need to explore the other things that are out there, and they may have a better implementation reason, and therefore they could have a greater impact, which could bring in budget to offset it.
Absolutely. You're answering the opposite question from the one I asked, but that's a really good answer.
Okay.
I completely agree that there are times when buying the technology makes more sense, and having tried to support open source software in a lot of different scenarios, we're in that scenario right now. We started this course trying to use Big Blue Button and realized at some point that we just needed something that was a little bit more robust. So we tried the open source alternative, and it didn't work for us. I'm asking the opposite question, which is, do you find yourself paying more money for technology simply because that helps adoption? Because I found that if we have a project that costs $2 million, it's an awful lot easier to get people to play ball than it is if it's free. The more expensive the project, the easier the adoption. To me, it's always been easier the more money it costs.
I think I'm not sure that the money being spent on technology is so much the interest piece. I think it's the fact that you've been able to draw a significant amount of funds that demonstrates to either executives or government leaders or what have you that, you know, they are playing with someone who probably has some credibility in order to achieve that funding in the first place, right? So I don't think it's that the money spent on technology. I think it's the fact that you've been able to obtain a budget and get that kind of support behind you. So I don't think it has anything to do that's spent on technology. In fact, you know, we did have like, I don't know, $100,000 spent on renos, a chunk spent on operating, and, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't think it has anything to do with what the budget spent on, but that you've achieved something of that scale. Oh, Jill wants to talk. I realize, so I'll release the mic. Hold on.
Hi. Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I just want to make sure I'm not giving feedback. I think also, from wearing my other hat as instructional designer and somebody who worked a lot in faculty development at the post-secondary level. I think it's oftentimes really how much money we spend on demonstrating the use of the technology, both old and new, right? So even looking at straight up just doing video and what we've got here, I mean, it's not necessarily brand new. I mean, obviously video conferencing has been around for a very long time, and this isn't just about video conferencing, but it's about trying to enable as many people to connect in as many ways as they possibly can. And so demonstrating that it's possible and the uses of it through case studies, for example, that aren't Valerie and I, that are, you know, people outside of our circle, and how easy it is for them to use it, really goes a long way, a long, long way to have, you know, a faculty member outside of our circle in there. She's a self-professed technophobe, and she comes in and she sits down and she presses start, and it basically takes care of itself, and she's able to teach the way she wants to, and it's really seamless. And in terms of technology adoption, that part is really significant, and so it's the ease of use for faculty is a big one, and also ease of use for the student as well.
Do you want to share the live stream now?
Sure, we can share the live stream. Oh, we actually don't have our videos on.
Or what?
So somebody was wondering, Jeff was just wondering why we're not getting any video.
All right, let me just send the...
I can
show you my video. I can hear myself. So am I recording? No. Through yours.
I am back.
Hey, where's my video?
We're going to need one open mic at a time, folks.
All right. So tell me if this works.
That's fine. Oh, wait. Were we doing something fun? Okay.
Maybe.
AMSContentUVic.ca. Clicking now. Assuming everybody else will, too.
I don't know if this is going to work.
I see Change 11 discussion. Dr. and Jillian Code. Download Silverlight plugin.
That's the wrong skin that we, well, not the wrong skin, the other skin that we had for iPad that we played today, we have to go back and configure something. So you won't get that in the next iterations of this tool.
So it means I won't get the Silverlight requests in the next configurations?
Yeah.
So what do I do then? Can I just ignore the...
You got to get Silverlight put on your thing in the meantime. That's not going to be there in the next time.
I've got Silverlight on here anyway. I don't know why it's asking me. Okay, there we are. We got video of the thing we're doing anyway. Perfect. Hey, there you guys are. You're over there.
Here we are.
On a delay.
A little bit.
There's like a 15 or 20 second delay.
There's a delay. There's always a delay.
We know all about it. We've been webcasting on EdTech Talk for years, and there's that 40-45 second delay that we've been working with. Yay, I see them. So do something fancy. Wave or something.
Okay, but you're not going to see it for like 10 seconds. 10 seconds.
There it is.
I'm going to get on the table, I could dance, you know.
That'd be great.
So, yeah, called the Accordant Media Management System is a portal. Actually, we should bring up the portal interface to show that.
Okay.
AMMS.UVic.ca.
I think you can get it on the
guest account, but we really haven't polished.
Table, I could dance, you know?
What's that?
You guys were hugging just when that happened. Just
to give
you guys
a
Turn.
I thought you said tweet, so I was like, I'm going to go to my Twitter on my iPhone and see if you tweet at me. So the nice thing about this is, like I said, whatever's showing on our screen here, we can have BlueJeans Network, what we did, which merges Skype with video conferencing and telephone all in one call and shares the content, right? So you still get that content screen. Like the next screen can live stream that to, or next screen can live stream it to an iPad. I actually had it today. Like again, we're just troubleshooting the iPad skin, but I took a, you know, the iPad, I have right here, and I typed in the URL, but with the other skin, and I had a live stream playing on here. And I had actually my colleague Allison and her grad students were having a meeting, and actually, do you want to see if you can zoom in on this, David, a little more? We should introduce David, our, like, David.
Yeah, turn the microphone around. Give a sense who's there.
Come on, turn around, David. David is our lab assistant, you know, guru. David, can you do this? David, we need that. So, there.
And actually, do you want to see if you can zoom in on us, David, a little more?
He rocks. And I always mispronounce his name. Always.
David's not that hard a name to say, really.
No, it's Feinstein. I always say Feinstein. I don't know why, but I get it all wrong. But yeah, I don't know. So I was walking with the iPad over to the Admin Services building because we were supposed to walk the minister over back, and so I had it with the meeting going on, watching it live, watching their video, going, this is fantastic. I'm walking in wireless, you know, between two buildings on campus, and I basically, that's a classroom I could get a live stream of and content of and all that. So. Did you stop the recording? Oh, David accidentally stopped the live stream. So I think maybe everyone just got cut off. Did you find that to be the case?
Not yet.
Not yet. 10-second delay, and boom, I think it might stop. Oh, well. So yeah. Are you there? Can anyone?
We're still here. Yeah, no, I'm following along. The only problem is you're not making a distinction of when you're talking to each other and when you're talking to us.
Oh.
So we never know when you're talking to me. But I think I've got it now. I think I've figured out the tones of voice, so we're all good. You keep going.
I know. You know what? Actually, we're like the dun 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 dun. You know the who can name that?
What is it?
It's The Odd Couple. There you go. The Odd Couple. When you start working together in like a married couple, you know? So, all right. Someone said it cuts out. Yeah, it cut out because our lab assistant pressed stop. But you know what? We don't actually need to continue to have that going unless you want it. We could stay in this. There's a new link. Do you guys want the new link back on for a live stream? More links. Okay, what's really annoying, Stephen?
Stephen has a problem with something. He's doing a separate technology, trying to do something similar to you right now in the background, and he's having some struggles with it.
Okay, you know what, Stephen? I know all about that. That's like half my life. Yeah, let's let participants grab audio, video, that kind of thing, and share. Anyone want to take the mic next and ask a question? I'm hanging up so there'll be room for it.
Test 1, 2.
Stephen Downs!
Were you able to hear that? Looks like you were. Let me tell you, this is totally unrelated to the presentation or anything you guys are doing, I think. Because I've sort of lost track of it coming in and out. But using Illuminate, I'm usually able to use Audacity to record the sound, or use Edcast to broadcast it on a webcasting network by using StereoMix. But right now, Illuminate is taking complete control over, Blackboard Collaborate is taking complete control over the audio in and out. They're still working in the background, but I don't hear them, and I can't get any sound from them in. So it's like the audio has been completely sandboxed. This is new. This only started happening this week. I had no problem with it before.
I guess when you look at this and you look at the sort of scenarios we've got going here, maybe it puts things into context. Jeff Lebo, who's in the chat room, who's been doing live webcasting since at least 1998, was sort of my sort of encouragement to get this stuff started and to do this kind of live work and the live interactivity. I mean, and the stuff, I've never seen the Blue G stuff that you're talking about today, and it is really neat, and the ability to go back and forth and really to to connect the sort of free stuff with the point-to-point stuff that is always the struggle with the traditional conferencing hardware. But I wonder, you know, you've got three people there, one person hits the wrong button, it goes off. It's so easy to lose those students. It's so easy to have one technological challenge, have students drop out or have them feel frustrated. And Stephen Downs, so I think it's his first day using technology. I think he started last week or something. And his technology has fallen apart on his end. I wonder, you know, we've been at this for almost 20 years now. How is it that we don't have an ability to get to this a little bit easier? And I wonder, maybe I'll turn the question back to our guests, Valerie or Jillian, whoever happens to have the conch at the moment. Can you talk a little bit about how you structure situations and help maybe work with faculty to talk about how they can prepare their students for the inevitability of the technological breakdown?
Do you want me to talk, or do you want to have one of our guests take a mic, or can we both?
You guys are the guests.
All right. Okay, so the inevitability of the breakdown. I find that students are A-okay with the breakdown if you warn them a breakdown's coming. I haven't, unless it's repeated again and again and again, then obviously they've had it. But I get the sense that even, like, for example, the pilot course that we've got going this term, the group around the sitting around the table here with our professor, they were excited about it. They're happy to be part of it. We were going around going, oh, sorry, I'm going to try this. Do you mind this? I'm going to stop. I'm going to go, and here's the link, and, oh, we got to do this again. Check it, and it's all smooth. They're fine around it because they know that they're part of a pilot. I think when something becomes mainstream, I think it becomes an expected service or service that's demanded, like Moodle. I think Moodle going down or something like that across campus would be a very different story. I think that would be to, are you on Blue Jeans?
I'm on Blue Jeans.
Jill's interrupting me. Sorry. This is a problem, like, that about having a co-presenter. You're making my chain of thought. So I think when it becomes an essential service, then those drops can happen. Right now, what we're doing in the Thai lab is we are in pilot stage, right? So trying out Blue Jeans, right, trying the Cordant, you know, things are going to not work necessarily well. Is the server stable? Is the skin working? And sometimes there is a learning process where you kind of go, oh, this thing's crappy. You realize, oh, right, that's my problem, my fault. Oh, right, we need to do this. And so originally there's a, where do you assign the blame? Is this user error or is this, you know, is this a system error? So during that pilot stage, you figure out what's what. When you come to the point where you say, well, man, these are all system errors, then that's when you dump the system. When you've worked out the, you know, these are user errors, and then we tweak our flow, then you've got a robust system, right, assuming the equipment will always work the way you want it to work. And
but I've never seen live equipment that works the way you want it to work.
Well, we'll see. I don't think I've had that much of bad luck. I've had definitely some issues with the Accordant setup. So, and we're working with them to figure out, you know how that is. And what we're trying to do is a lot of troubleshooting at a distance as well. So, I think we're going to be talking face to face more on how that jives. The Blue Jeans, fantastic. Has anyone logged into the Blue Jeans? I haven't. I think Jill's in there. But we haven't dialed in with our VC unit. So I don't know. It's one of these things. How many tools do we want to have in video going live at the same time on your workstation right now? Going back to a question we had earlier. No, I don't think we dialed in with our VC unit next. But there was a question. Oh, yeah, we are on there. No, that's... Yeah, but this is just you on your laptop, though. We haven't dialed in from our video conference unit into Blue Jeans. Right? No, so that's what I mean. But going back to, is it Jeff asked a question? I know, break the internet. That's what we're here to do, work on the edge of everything. But the question about costs, the cost of Accordant, I think it was around like 150-ish thousand. We acquired it for 75 through, you know, various, what do you call it, negotiation-y things. And then I think for Capture Station, part of that included the big, massive portal. Can you bring up the portal as the content?
You're the content.
I'm the content? Oh, but this is on the AMS stream. Do you want to share our content on the AMS stream, or do you want to share it on the Collaborate screen? Do you know what I mean? Collaborate's recorded, and part of, I mean, we can provide the other recording as well, but can we make a web tour here? We can go to web tour and go to amms.uvic.ca. So there's a portal, and basically think of, you know, how Moodle has a big portal to log in, AMMS has a big portal to log in, and you can use guest, but, you know, please take with a grain of salt that this is an enterprise-level installation, and we haven't polished the front end at all yet. And so we're just playing around with that. It didn't work? Guest? Or your login didn't work? Guest didn't work? Oh, I thought it would. Oh, or maybe we restarted that. Well, so anyhow, to go describe that, the AMMS things, like a little login where you go into, oh, it works on there. Oh, well, if you want, you can troubleshoot that with David while I'm talking. So then we have imagine a tree structure, and we have a tree structure that will go to departments, and every department's listed, and then within each department are courses, and then within each course you can see, like, an instructor's videos, but also allow student upload. There's an upload button, and every class list would be assigned permissions that they can upload videos within their own course folder. And so the nice thing about this is, for those people who are, you know, I know some people roll their eyes, but for many universities, at least in Canada, they're Patriot Act nervous, or they don't want to have things on U.S. servers. They want all student content to be stored on you know, their campus land. So that's a solution for having student videos being able to share within the class. And it can, first it goes to the instructor for approval, and then it's stored within the MMS skin. But like, I can always give you a login for that. And for those people who are I know well, like, you know, or I probably do trust, I can give you a sandbox admin login to play around with it from the inside. So that's one piece of it. The other piece was the capture station, which, you know, this thing's about $25,000-ish. But frankly, like I said, if we just get even three more enrollees at as an online counterpart, then I'm rolling his eyes. I see you. Are you Ben? Then it actually is cost recoverable. And also maybe we can even have further monies come back into tuition to support. And nothing's profit at university, right? So I don't want to use the word profit, because we can, you know, use those pots to go and support other essential services on campus, right? Anything that's black and not red is a good thing, because generally most universities are getting 3% cuts every year in Canada. And those 3% cuts end up translating into FTE layoffs, right? And we don't want that. So does that answer your question? I think it was Jeff's question. Yeah, red is bad. I don't like seeing, you know, wonderful people down the curriculum library. Like, we had our ed tech person in our curriculum library laid off, and a communications officer laid off. And it's just like, I don't like seeing that. So it also affects, you know, how we, our quality of education. And we are, like I said, doing well. I've heard of universities in the States going like 0.8 FTE. People are asked to stay home, or entire programs laid off. And this is a global thing right now.
Is that Jillian we're looking at now?
What's that?
Who's that in the picture?
Oh, me. And that's a terrible picture.
I got you guys mixed up again.
that's like, there's a smart board in the background, the screen is blue on, like it's timed out, and I would never have the video conferencing unit next to the smart board. Like, it's just, that was taken ages ago while I was still moving a whole bunch of stuff around. Anyhow,
I think it's awesome that you have a blue screen of death as the
Oh, it's not the screen of death, it's a timeout. It's a computer seeking source, right? Anyhow, that's a look at the inside portal, right? So that's the expensive system. But it's neat. So if we can get this thing rolling to our satisfaction, then it will be an institutional tool, because it's basically TILAB buying it and turning it over and saying, you, Vic, you want it. And with other funding that we've applied for, hopefully we can get, there's a $2 million grant we applied for, and then we can actually even tell UVic that they don't even have to support it. We have the staffing to support it, so it's part of a bigger initiative. Anyhow, someone says they haven't gotten the blue jeans to work. Are online offerings being promoted any more than traditional face-to-face programs? Is that in general? I mean, I can speak to my own. Every university and every priority is different, right? And even within programs, like we've got some programs at UVic that are hardcore online promoted, and others that are just like psychology's department here has not, I think their very first online course ever is starting this term. That's one of the, I can't say if it's promoted more. I'm interested in promoting both of them and having face-to-face and online, you know, counterparts to a class being used. So generally at UVic, yeah, I have to say it depends. I think we're starting to get buy-in with Faculty of Education, especially now that they're seeing some of the stuff we're bringing in. They're going, oh my God, we should do that, right? They have to see it to believe it, right? You can talk the talk and all that. Or they'll generally, yeah, it's important, we should do that sometime. But really, until it's in their backyard down the hall, it's not going to happen.
Do you make, I mean, I'm interested in the way that you guys have that conversation. You're talking about people coming online and coming in and being more excited about the stuff once they see the technology. We take a Faculty of Education. With some departments, it's often, you know, a little difficult to maybe make pedagogical arguments because in some places those arguments just, you can't have them in that way. But when you approach the Faculty of Education, what kinds of arguments or what kind of positions would you take in terms of the affordances that are available inside of this kind of learning? How do you have that conversation with those guys?
The affordances that are available in this kind of learning, are you talking about online learning, or are you talking about multi-access learning, or either or?
Well, I mean, specifically what you're presenting here, but I mean, if you want to bridge that out to online learning more generally, by all means, go ahead.
Frankly, I mean, do you want any mic time too? Let me know, because I'm still sitting there really quiet. Let me know when you want to pull up the mic. That's showing. Okay, you can't do both. Oh well. It's about recruiting, I think, quality students at the graduate level. And so, talking graduate programs, I think I mentioned last week how I've had really, like, I think a distance learner who is a you know, sort of high GPA, wonderful letters of reference, that kind of thing at a distance would be a lot better to accept than someone who's face-to-face who's weaker, right? I think we have basically options right now only really for face-to-face students, but now that we're showing this around and we have arguments, we have strong examples. The blue jeans not working for some people? Well, it's only third time I've ever used it, second time I've ever hosted it. We can show it what we have, right? And we can also do a blue jeans test on another day with the blue jeans people, just to make sure. Can we see a video via blue jeans? Saw it briefly before, and it looks sharper than accordant. It doesn't look sharper than accordant on this end. And more in sync with audio. Yeah, it will be more in sync with audio, probably. Like I said, the con with the blue jeans is that if you want to view content, your video disappears. You have to choose which one you watch. And the other thing is the max of 25. So I think we need to look at our large lectures and those kinds of things and go, well, it'd be nice to actually have a counterpart. We hear about the MIT or Stanford,
85,000 registrations. Whoa! And everyone gets so excited. And I kind of go, why are they
excited?
So excited?
Is it that universities are thinking, we can do that too. We can have these mass courses. I wonder about that. Did you want?
Are you connected to
Google? Oh. So we'll try and get that going. You do have audio, real-time lagged, I think, through Illuminate. So that's a Collaborate Illuminate thing rolling, and you've got other live videos running in. If you've got the Accordant rolling, and you've got, it could be, we're testing our grounds of play. And you've got all three rolling, and how is it going with all three? Is that okay on your computer? There's the link again to BlueJeans. But I don't really want to make it into like let's get everything rolling with the different pieces. We can focus on having a blue jeans test again another time, and we can focus on having like things separately. Right now we're trying to merge them all, and hopefully it is good. Your computer is fine. Brain's a bit scrambled though. Yours or mine, Jeff? I think mine's more scrambled. Like I said, I had to chase some weirdo down the street at UVic who was trying to break into, actually he walked into our Thai lab, real weirdo. So I think I'm more scrambled, end of day. Questions from everybody in the group. Anyone want to take the mic? Somebody joined Blue Jeans? We get a little blip whenever someone joins. I'll share the link that we had. I've had this kind of day, Stephen. Skype decided to reinstall. I had that actually. I was trying to do a DS106 radio show with Stephen Hurley, and that happened with Nigel from New Zealand as well. But I did get that Brady Bunchy thing on Blue Jeans, which shows everyone's heads. If you can actually see, if you're curious, go to bc.net, and if you go to that website, you'll see like a screen capture. BCNet's like the four universities working together on advising the CIOs at the four big universities in British Columbia. And they've been piloting Blue Jeans and adopted it there. So if you... enable your video on Blue Jeans so we can see you.
Hi.
There's Stephen.
Hi, Stephen.
I'm going to go, hello. And on that website, there should be a screen capture. I'm not sure, is it there anymore? Hey, there's Stephen.
There we go.
And who's in the red shirt? Wonderful. So, yeah, so this is a neat tool for, and so, oh my God, Stephen, you are on my huge, like, 50-inch plasma screen, and you're looking awesome. You're looking fantastic. You know what I have actually thought? Jill's going to take a picture of it, and we'll tweet it or something. That's wonderful. This is a wonderful thing about playing with toys, and then you can sort of kind of go, okay, what's appropriate for what slot? And that's where someone earlier was talking about there, so you don't have to have something not to look at. By playing all these different tools, you can advise your university better about what to. Stephen, smile. She's taking a picture of you. Wonderful. You're getting back down again. So I don't know. What do you think of all this? I got to go back to the questions. The hard part about doing a demo-y kind of toolsy Q&A session is that I'm probably really fragmented and distracted. the image with the ladies is a lot better. Is that you're trying to do things like troubleshoot and set up at the same time as answer a question, track it. So if it'll probably be simpler if we actually didn't try all these different things. But it is cool that you get to hopefully try something new. I can see Dave Cormier. Is that Dave?
Yeah, that's Dave.
Cool. Hey, we've got to take a picture of you now, too. Okay, can you get a picture of me kissing his cheek in front of the video, and then we could tweet that? Who's that?
John Mack.
Oh, hold still for the camera. You're moving. Sydney. Okay, freeze. Freeze and smile. All right. Dave, you start talking, so you take the big screen on ours. Dave, make noise, so you're big screen. Oh, children will work perfect. They will make noise. So it's like an active presence thing. So whoever's talking gets the big screen on blue jeans. Are you meowing, Stephen? All right. Can't think of anything to say. There you go. All right, lean in and smile. David Cormier, lean in and smile. Awesome. So let me go back and see if there's any more questions I missed. See, I don't know, I love chat, but I also get so frustrated because I can't keep up with it. I tend to be not as multitasky as I should. I don't think there's any of it. So questions, stuff you want me to comment on or Jill to comment on? Are you wandering around taking pictures still? What's your experience like with the different interfaces and what do you think? Like that image right now that you see of your blue jeans with the Brady Bunch, imagine that being on my video conference unit and that's and then the content being streamed and it's all within AMS. That's why I thought the two can be merged together. And it can be live streamed to an iPad, and maybe start getting syncy issues, but like, or not syncy, delay issues. I haven't had sync issues on the AMS on my iPad, but if you start thinking that can be streamed around the world, then I don't know. It's way better than all these text-based environments that I find predominantly on predominantly on Moodle. Can we see video via BlueJeans? Saw it briefly before. It looks sharper than a cord and more sync. Is that an old one? That's an old one. No more.
That's Jeff.
Yeah, that's a while ago. Is that still? I think he's in though, isn't he? What is he in? We lost Dave Cormier.
Yeah, no, I backed out because there was doubled audio and I wasn't sure if it was going into the recording or not. So I figured okay. I better get out.
Sure.
So looking forward, then, if you look at some of the stuff that you're talking about. It seems like Jeff Lebo has already started attacking your system and put up screen grabs and stuff. What do you think are some of the new possibilities that you can leverage? I mean, you talk about around the world and that kind of stuff. Talk to me a little bit about what the sort of, yeah, you can use it in a classroom, you can use it for, you know, straight up teaching and replace classrooms and get new students. Tell me about something that is outside of that. Tell me about something new that can happen using this technology.
All right, well, Jill and I, do we want to talk about TIE21's pitch in detail? Or do you want to keep it a surprise? I don't know. It's one of the things that if it's not real, it's an ask. We've, all right, here's a possible case. We've applied to a corporate foundation for $1.75 million to create a pan-Canadian open online program for K-12 teachers to develop 21st century teaching learning skills. And the idea there would be that we would have the skin, but it wouldn't have UBIC on it. We would just make it TIE21 because we wouldn't want to have our university being like in a dominant place. We'd never get someone like U of T or, you know, whatever, some other university being under it. We would want it to be a collaborative effort where universities provide some of the content, and then the other bit of the content being provided by actual practicing teachers. It's one thing right now, and we have a big BC Ed plan thing supported or being put forward that we are going to change personalized learning. Our ministry has hired 5 curriculum officers. We're going to revamp our curriculum, try and hopefully they're going to realize doing something really innovative. But what does that look like? I think, you know, can faculties of ed, you know, actually say what that looks like in the classroom as opposed to teaching, like, what it is conceptually. I had a teachable kind of example from when I had, I mean, Dave, you've got little kids. When I had my first baby, I was part of a living and learning with your baby class or something like that. You know, parent ed class when you're little, when you've got little ones. And it turned into we created an e-support group, turned into a research study. That's kind of what I end up doing sometimes on the side. And we called it community-based, cohort-based e-support for parents of infants and toddlers. And it was huge, the fact that we could communicate with each other. It's about almost 10 years ago now. And the VHA nurse, right, the health authority nurse, she didn't have a baby, like, for, what, 25 years. Her kids were grown. She could talk to us about things that are, like, vitamin D that you need to have or vaccinations and that kind of thing. But there's a lot of mother to mother or father to father, like, you know, the new parent information that needs to be exchanged that nurse really can't advise you on anymore because she's out of practice. She doesn't really know. And frankly, I don't think I could advise someone with a baby on some of the things, because when you're in it, you figure out your survival skills, and they need to share those survival skills. And then I realized, you know, that was such an important piece, the parent-to-parent talk, the mother-to-mother talk. And I teach in a pre-service teacher education, so is Jill. And I just realized, holy, I'm that nurse. Do you know what I mean? I'm reading the lit, you know, trying this, teaching the concepts, that kind of thing. But I have not been teaching in the K-12 classroom. And if these changes are coming in, I'm not part of those changes, and I'm not part of actually being, you know, how to survive in that K-12 classroom, demonstrating that. So looking at teaching in an open online program and saying maybe half the content should be provided by those teachers, practicing teachers. So let them upload their own videos within this system. We could even port into where they are and capture it live because we can do that, you know, and sort of make the TIE Lab like a home base for an observational lab or capture lab to get these wonderful, what it looks like in your classroom to do X. And then the other part being from faculty members or other, you know, experts to be able to provide the content of, you know, what that looks like, you know, what they know about their content area or their specialty. But having it a mix of both worlds, and then why would teachers take the time to upload their video, contribute to that knowledge base? Because their video would turn out to be the program, right, half of it at least, and also they could use it in trade for course credit. So that's the concept that we have going of trying to develop something.
Hold on a second here. You just slipped that in the end.
What?
That little tiny trade it for course credit.
If they want it.
Hold
if
on
want
a second.
To.
That's not easy.
If they want to. Well, sure it's easy. All I have to do is right tomorrow I could do that for someone as a director of studies.
How?
It's totally easy. EDCI-495G, enroll, you got it.
Okay, you're saying that right now I could go to my YouTube account and trade the 47 educational videos I have there for course credit at your university.
If I agreed to take it on as the instructor of that course, I'd just fill out the paperwork and done. So there is a fast way of doing things, but that's we want to have the implemented way, right, which is passing calendar changes and all that jazz formally. But anyone can do anything like that at any university.
I can't do it at mine. I've tried.
It's called directed studies. Every faculty, every department has a directed studies. They may call it independent studies.
No, I know what you're talking about, but it's not. We have like
David
massive battles in Senates over this. Like
no.
it's
to
not
UVic
a.
Then. I'll give it to you at UVic. David did one last term on basically helping to, do extra work with regards to the AMMS system and playing around and what else? What else do you do? A bunch of things like that. Making
Can I
blog.
Get my PhD? In mucology, that's what Jeff Lebo wants me to get in the chat room.
Yeah, well, hey, you know what? I've got now my our grad advisor buy-in. We can do your PhD by multi-axis, probably. So, we'll see. Mucology. Any other questions? You want to talk? You can give up the content.
We've got about 5 minutes before the hour is up there, folks. If you guys want to, it'd be nice if Jillian dropped in for a few minutes.
Yeah, I know. Why aren't you dropping in?
You have to drop
Get out of blue jeans.
You just keep talking. All right. Val has this affliction where she just starts and it just kind of keeps rolling. I don't know about the whole mucology thing. I guess I am not passive. How dare you? I'm passive aggressive. I'm the one that actually does all the work. Val just talks. Too funny. No, I didn't say that. Anyway, no, this is true. This is very true. This is largely Valerie. But actually, Dave, you do bring up a really good question, or Jeff does, in terms of, well, how is this going to change, or how, you know, are we able to transform the way that we deliver PhD programs and that kind of thing? And I do think that the involvement of the faculty members does need to change and does need to adapt, and how can we make that happen? So we're definitely looking. Yeah, this is so distracting. You've got like so many things going on.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's too conflicting to have.
No, I don't think that you can do a PhD at a distance, completely at a distance. No, I do definitely agree with that. But how can you carry on the relationship? If you've got, for example, if you have, a working professional, you know, somebody who's working as a principal in the school and they want to do a PhD or even an EdD. How can we support them through that process without having them quit their job, right? And so we need to figure out ways where we can facilitate that kind of relationship, right? So how can we adapt what we're doing, in terms of course delivery, but also in terms of staying connected with our students and still trying to maintain a level of quality, right? But also I think a lot of it is in the collaboration. So that's my opinion anyway. And this is so distracting.
That's why when some people are like, how is a two-way conversation when you do some things? Well, it depends on the class. Sometimes, you know, you don't want to have, like, I find personally the chat box is great, but it's also, I've seen we only have, 12 people going right now, and I've seen, like, with large participants, the thing just scrolls, like, crazy down the screen, and frankly, I just think at that point, I've actually, believe it or not, I have cut a piece of paper and I have taped it on my monitor on top of that thing, so I don't even want to see that, because it's not helping in any way, shape, or form, right, other than just making noise. I'm not calling all you guys noise, but I'm just saying it depends on, I think you say, a chat window like this, it probably has the maximum capacity of people contributing, right? Otherwise, it starts distracting. So, and maybe that's why that Accordant thing has a Q&A thing where the Q&A gets sent through the system, and then the instructor, you can have a mediator in between, which will collect and gather repeated questions that are similar, or I'll send them forward at appropriate times to the instructor when they're talking. And at least that way the instructor's not getting bombarded while they're, you know, giving their talk with, you know, here are constantly things coming through that it's gathered up or what have you.
I wonder though, at some point, like, we've done, this is our 16th or 17th week here, and I mean, we've done a lot of this kind of stuff. I don't know that people are going to be able to make that argument going forward. I mean, realistically, when you look at the literacies that you needed to have to be a faculty member in the 19th century, you know, you had to have an incredible ability to call things from memory. You had to have a really strong ability to organize the sort of the books that were at your command and give them access to those kinds of things. I think that going forward, the ability to be able to filter those kinds of things and be able to still perform some kind of facilitation in this scenario is going to become something that is unavoidable. You know, whether or not it's, you know, a sticky tape that you put over your monitor, or it's something else that you do, at some point those are the literacies that are going to carry us forward.
Are you saying I'm not very good at 21st century teaching online? I'm having a challenge in multitasking all this.
I didn't say that. What I'm saying is that
I'm just joshing with you.
Those are the kinds of things that, I mean, it's distracting. There's no doubt about it. One of the solutions is to put the sticky tape over it, but that's the solution for how to deal with it. I don't think that that's a negative thing.
Yeah.
You just need to know the way that you work on stuff, and it's not a problem with the chat room. It's the way that you organize a way to do it. And what Jeff says in here, I'm biased because Jeff and I have been doing this together for 6 or 7 years, is that at some point you can't do this alone. Mm-hmm. If you're a single person trying to deal with, George and I did a session last year, George Seaman and I did a session last year, we had 289 people in the chat room. You just can't do it as a single person. It needs to be two people or three or four or five. And then our whole models of education start to change. You know, it means that you can't do online facilitation as a single person. One person watches one, the other does the other, and then you switch back and forth, and that ends up being the way that you facilitate. You know, whereas in a power structure where the facilitator is out front and has complete control, and then, you know, the students don't have a chance to be able to interact or interrupt in any of those ways, it changes. And I think that's one of the really interesting changes, the kind of technologies that you guys have presented today. Challenge instructors, challenge facilitators in those ways where, you know, maybe it does mean that you have to have four people teaching these things. I don't know. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, like the chat monitor. It is possible. And do you need to have four people? I think probably you need that extra support when you're getting rolling. But I think once you have the system that's in place for that given group for that given time, you know what tool is appropriate. That's why they have the one tool fits all scenario for a campus, and it's, you know, it's not necessarily the case. But yet we tend not to have money for multiple tools, so it's like what's going to be the best size fits all ends up being in place. Any other questions, comments? Feedback. What did you think? What did you think of Blue Jeans? What did you think of the Accordant stream? And what did you think of it, you know, compared to Collaborate? What do you think of their fits with regards to different environments? The classic large lecture, the online class, a multi-access class. So there's lots of, you know, ways to try and see fit.
Maybe those would be nice questions for us to send out on Twitter and send to the chat room tonight and say, you know, for those of you who are here at the end of the conversation, if you can go out, you know, Jen M., who was chatting earlier, has let her blog wander for a while. It might be a good idea to get back in there and get a response to this in there. But I guess then that's the question going forward. What is the difference, and how can these be more effective? And we've actually passed the hour that we've put through, and we like to keep these to an hour as much as we can. I'd like to really thank our guest tonight for coming in and giving us that kind of ride and, you know, wandering through the different technologies and prompting the discussion. So Valerie and Jillian, thanks very much for coming out tonight. And for the rest of you, those questions are maybe the ones that we're left with, which is, how are these different? How do they change? What are the possibilities given the technologies that they've shown us tonight? and you know, those as responses to them for this week. Don't forget to tag those posts as Change 11 going forward. And then I hope to see all of you somewhere on the internet in the next couple of weeks. Change 11 comes back to you next week, and we'll have somebody new. It'll be all good. Thanks, everybody. Hi, Stephen. And I'm going to stop the recording now. I hope to see you all next week.
Thank you.